What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Extreme Drummers Podcast. I am Dan Wilding, and first and foremost, before I get on to the this episode, I just want to say a massive thanks to everybody who listened to the first episode. I had some wicked messages and stuff from people who listened to it, and they got in touch to say that they enjoyed it and it was interesting, and they were looking forward to more. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much to everybody for taking the time out to listen to the first episode. And yeah, now we're back with episode two, which is a wicked one. This week we've got the absolutely legendary Krim. If you don't know Krim, then you've probably been living under a rock for the last 10 years or so. But Krim is a unbelievably good drummer and a wonderful human. Plays for the band Septic Flesh, previously Decapitated, and just a ton of other stuff. A session for Behemoth once. He's just an unbelievable drummer. Really, really lovely guy. We've known each other for a long time. We touched on it briefly. We met back way back in the day, way before Instagram and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. But so it was wicked to have a good catch up. And yeah, there's some really, really cool stuff in here. There's a lot of advice, a lot of wisdom, a bit of nerdiness as well, and maybe some controversial opinions on some stuff too. I'll let you guys be the decider of that. But it's a long one. It's about an hour and 45 minutes-ish, plus my rambling intro, so that's about an hour and 50 minutes. So I hope you can stick it out to the end, because it's a really good chat. It's really interesting stuff. But if you enjoy it and you're enjoying the podcast in general, or you want some more news and updates and all that kind of stuff, then you can get in touch on Instagram at Extreme Drummers Podcast, or you can get in touch with me at Dan Wilding Drum. Facebook is at Dan Wilding Drum, and the podcast will be uploaded to YouTube. And also, I made a little website, which is literally just the podcast, so you can just go listen to the podcast, and that's extremedrummerspodcast.com. So that's hopefully everything you need to know. But either way, episode two, Extreme Drummers Podcast. Extreme Drummers Podcast. I can't talk. Extreme Drummers Podcast, episode two with Krim. I really hope you enjoy it. Thank you again for listening. And see you soon. Krim, how are you, my dude?
I'm good, you know. I mean, the circumstances, everybody knows how it is. You know, pandemic bullshit. But besides that, I'm healthy. I play a lot of drums. I still have a home. I still have food. So I think that's okay. Think we are safe.
So basically all your basic needs are met, so you can't complain.
one thing, meeting people and playing live, that is something I definitely miss. So
I don't know about you, I'm finding that the toughest, and this is why this is nice, is the social aspect
of course of
kind of touring and playing shows and stuff, because you don't realize how much a part of it is until you don't do it anymore. Like, we're not doing it now. You're like, oh shit, I used to see people all day, every day. And now I don't see anybody.
24/7. Yeah, you're 24/7 exactly. With the same dudes in the bus for 1 month. And you're like, now you kind of miss this.
At the time, you hate them. But now, it's you miss them.
isn't that always how it is in life? You always want what you don't have at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And the grass is always greener, because, you know, when we get back out, if we get back out, then we're probably going to hate each other within 10 minutes again. So
probably within 5 minutes, because we lost all the social...
Yeah, exactly.
How to say that, like, how to behave with people, what to say, you know? But I don't want to be rude. How are you? Sorry if it's like...
Oh, dude, not at all, man. I've brought you up. Oh, yeah, and thank you very much for doing this. Thank you for taking your time out to chat
to
me.
Of course. It's a pleasure.
We continue our bromance. But
yes.
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm good. Again, it's just, I mean, I'm lucky I've got the kids that keep me very busy and keep me distracted, which is... It's exhausting, but it's also great, because, you know, I don't have time to think about small stuff and, you know, the stuff that might drive me crazy otherwise.
Yeah, that's I think something very precious, you know, when you have your family and you have something like someone you can take care of, and you keep your head away from all the craziness a little bit. That's good.
Yeah, and you know, I think a lot of it is, it's kind of, I have to think about, or I have to try and think about keeping them as safe as possible. And, you know, kind of, again, it kind of brings it away from me, which is quite nice, because I don't know if you're like this, but if I have too much time in my own head, I can go a bit mad and I overthink everything, and you know, I get all kind of neurotic. And maybe it's a musician thing. I don't know if it's just
you know what, I think it's a human thing, to be honest. Everyone has that. If you sit at home and you have nothing to do and you just start thinking, that's really dangerous, like because obviously you just think about the bad stuff and all the stuff you can worry about, you know.
Yeah, and especially now there's a lot of stuff to worry about.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know, contemplating like, okay, so will I ever play a concert again or not? Shall I quit it? Shall I try to find a different job? But then I'm like, doesn't make sense to find something else, because probably the chances are still better if I keep going what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, and you know, my hope, well, I don't even think it's a hope. I think it's going to be quite, I'd like to think it's quite obvious that when, I'm saying when now, not if, when we get back to it, I think, not just us, not just we as musicians are going to be excited as fuck, but I think everyone who wants to go to gigs is going to be super excited as well. So I think there's going to be a kind of like a, what's the word, a hunger that there hasn't been in a while. Because I think, you know, the scene, not necessarily all the metal scene, but there, you know, there were so many gigs all the time and everyone was touring all the time. And it was amazing, obviously, for us. You know, we loved it, but... But it's almost been like a bit of a reset, and everyone's like, yes, I want to get back out and, you know, want to make music, want to go see music. So it's trying to think of the positives anyway.
Yeah, definitely. No doubt about that. There's going to be a huge hunger from each side. You know, I'm a little bit worried about not the quality, but the quantity of tours that are about to happen. In terms of like, do we have enough venues? What about people? Do they have enough money to go to a concert every week? But you know, I don't want to again just jump into this negative headspace.
Exactly. That's not what we're here for. We're here to have a nice time and talk some shit. Exactly. So right, I'm gonna pull away from the negative.
Please.
Fuck you, COVID. I hate COVID. Anyway, so I've got notes. Look at my notes, dude. I've written
that's
notes.
That's professional.
I'm trying to be. So, again, my thing, right? And I'm really intrigued by yours. I've heard a little bit of yours on previous podcasts and stuff you've done, but daily routine. Ah. So, are you... I know you're an early riser, aren't you? You like to get up early. Do you still do that? Do you still do that post-COVID? Are you still like, get up, smash out the day, do some crazy shit?
Yeah, even more than before, to be honest. I wake up earlier than before, so now my usual time to get up is between 5 and 6 a.m. Yeah. So usually at this time we talk right now, I would probably start to crawl into the bed and start to go to sleep. But you know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. It's okay. Come on. I have to train for the moment when the tours are going to happen again.
That is true. Yeah. Late nights. Yeah.
Yes. But you know, the reason why I get up early is also that I have the practice room for my own. There is no one else. Mm. I mean, first of all, playing in the same room because I'm sharing the room.
Yeah.
And also in the house, there's nobody, so I can record. It's quiet. So,
do you feel more productive in the morning as well? Do you find the morning kind of suits you better as a person? Have you always been kind of a morning person, or is this more as you've grown up?
No, I have always been like busy, and I always wanted to like from the early morning do stuff. Mm. But I can be productive also in the afternoon. Sometimes I just feel like I don't have enough time to squeeze everything in one day.
Yeah.
But so I figured I have to just wake up earlier to have more from the day.
I love that, man. Most people now are just like, fuck it, I'm just going to stay in bed till
midday. No. That's the worst you can do. And to be honest, I play more than I've ever done. Like before COVID, I was focusing, of course, on playing shows and preparing for, I don't know, tours and just always practicing these kind of things, you know, like what has to be done. But now as there are no shows, there are no goals to what's going to happen next. I'm just, I can't practice again. It sounds very strange, but I didn't practice like this. Yeah, I think the last time was before I started to be a professional drummer. So it's kind of strange.
Yeah.
And so I'm playing way more. I can focus on things that I want to change, make better, even go back to basic stuff, which your body wants to like neglect a little bit and be like, no, no.
Yeah. Did you find initially that you, wouldn't say struggled, but was it hard to get yourself to practice initially? Like, you know, when everything stopped and you were like, ah, where's the next gig and blah, blah, blah. Did you find it hard to motivate yourself to practice initially, or did it immediately come as like, oh, great, I can do stuff that I've never, you know, I haven't worked on, as you said, since I was a teenager or whatever?
I think it's both. To find the motivation to push yourself is sometimes a bit difficult, especially when there is no goal or something you...
Yeah.
Like, you would practice for a tour, then you know you have to tour, so it is kind of complete, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So now I have different goals. Let's say I want to record covers or make different videos, or I have a session job. These are the things I would practice for. But no, I still have this, I don't know, maybe it's even some sort of a fear that, like, I have to do something otherwise. I will suck, and even though the whole world stands still, it doesn't mean that I have to stand still.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, because I was gonna move on to that, because you seem to me as a very disciplined man. Has that always been the case?
Like,
have you always been a, you know, you like to have a plan and like to forward momentum, as you just said, basically, like you always want to feel like you're doing stuff. Has that always been the case for you?
Yeah, I've always been this kind of like driven person, if you can say it like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So even looking back at school or being a kid, it has always been for me. And now it's worse, I guess. But I've always...
Or better, depending on how you look at it.
I don't know. Sometimes I find myself being like overworked or find it difficult to calm down because there's this constant need of doing something. So
yeah.
You will not see me sit around in case I cannot play anymore because I'm tired. I will be like, okay, what can I do now? I will edit some videos, or I'm going to clean the flat, or I'm going to do this. It's like, so I barely sit down, and I do not watch TV. So I don't have Netflix.
You never watch TV?
I don't have time for that. Like,
wow. Yeah, I guess you watch YouTube and stuff though.
Yes, I do watch YouTube, but it's still, again, I watch YouTube and I'm like, almost feel bad that I don't do anything productive. I know this is very...
Wow.
It shouldn't be like this because we need to rest. I'm aware of that and I have to learn that. I know that. But I just like to do things. It makes me happy.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. I think everybody needs to be happy, don't they? And if being productive makes you happy, just in the same way not doing anything and sitting on the couch watching TV makes another person happy.
Correct.
Then, you know, it has to work for you, and it has to make you happy. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yes, correct. And for me, it works. And
yeah, exactly. And it's, so, do you find as well, like, because coming back to practice, does that discipline mindset that you have, is it even conscious, the discipline thing, or is it just a kind of... is it just within you, do you think? Do you think you just kind of wake up and you're like, boom?
No, it is within me, you know.
You haven't, you know, practiced to be more disciplined or like learned how to be more disciplined or anything? Because I'm the kind of the opposite of you. I need more discipline.
Okay.
So, yeah, you can ask all my friends and my wife and most people. You know, I'm always late. I always leave things to the last minute. I mean, I still get stuff done, and you know, but it's only the stuff that I want to do. You know, anything outside of my little box of like, oh, this isn't fun, I don't want to do that. So, you know, and I'm always late and all that kind of stuff. I was even late today, so
that's okay. You got a good reason.
I can blame my kids for that one, but
exactly. That's what I mean. You got a good reason. No, don't worry.
But yeah, so do you feel like it's just kind of always been there? It's just a part of you. It's kind of how you are as a person. It's a personality kind of thing.
Definitely. Even in school, it didn't take long that I started to like wake up on my own, make my own breakfast, my own like lunch stuff for school. So wow. I would just try to be independent, not because my parents told me to do so. No, it just
felt like that was kind of the way that you wanted to do it. Again, what made you happy?
Correct. So for me, the thing now with the COVID thing is just to try not get this motivation and drive like being taken away by bad mood or because if you just open the news, you can be frustrated and just crawl underneath the blanket.
Absolutely, dude. Yeah, I refuse to read the news these days. I let other people tell me what's going on.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I like to be up to date what's going on, but sometimes it's just better if you stay away from that.
Yeah, exactly. And social media is pretty dangerous sometimes too, isn't it, with the negativity and negative vibes. So it's all a balance, isn't it? It's getting the balance. But sorry, I did have a point. I just completely forgot my point. But in your practice, because obviously now you're talking about practicing differently, do you apply that same discipline? Like, do you always have specific goals that you want to reach? Or are you more of a there's a analogy or a metaphor. It's like, you know, when you're going across a road and you find a pothole and you're like, oh, I'll fix that today. You know, you kind of those, I find problems as you go and fix them. Or are you more like, I want to be this and I'm going to practice until I'm that? Okay.
No, it has always been go with the flow, you know? And while going with the flow, I try to be as disciplined as I can. I'm not like the soldier and like I need to warm up for 2 minutes and 50 seconds and then I can play this. No. It has always been, you know, as you said, the second example. I would go with the flow and like, okay, this is something I could do. Yeah. I want to keep the fun, you know, it's most important.
Yeah, and again, with all this, I can relate to what you're saying. Like, now I'm practicing things that I probably never would have even thought of trying to practice.
You see?
Because of, as you said, because of distractions. And for me, and I'm wondering if it's the same for you, it's I can just sit at the drums and I'm like, that was fun today.
Definitely.
Which, again, hasn't happened in a while because I'm just like, I need to practice this and this needs to be done by then, and then I've got a show next week and I haven't practiced this in 2 weeks. So being able to do absolutely anything you want is quite nice, really, isn't it?
I totally agree. That's the beauty and that's the positive thing in this whole madness.
Yeah,
you have the freedom to be creative. You have the freedom to just go to the practice room and just play for 5 minutes and say like, you know what, it just felt good this 5 minutes, I just go home.
Why not? Why push it, kind of thing? Yeah.
Yeah. Or if you feel like pushing it, then you say, okay, good, I just make another extra hour because today I feel it. You know, nobody forces me, but I just feel good doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the freedom I was talking about before, that the freedom of practicing again, which reminds me of my early days of practicing. And then, you know, you start to be a professional drummer and you just, as you said, you do all those things that have to be done.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, I mean, I'm guessing you're still keeping very healthy. I see all your Instagram stories and stuff.
I try to. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's been a big part of your kind of routine for a while, right? Kind of health, fitness and all that kind of stuff. Did you say you studied it?
You know what? I think it all comes from the fact that I was in a sports school for 8 years. So
8 years, damn. Wow.
Yeah, and I was high school, sports high school.
Like a specific sports high school.
Yeah, so it was not one specific kind of sports, but it was like multi-sport stuff. But we had, so it was a high school with way more sports. So we had, I think, around 7 to 8 hours per week sports.
Yeah.
Wow. And I always enjoyed moving around and doing all kinds of different sports. So this has been with me all my life, more or less.
Yeah.
And that's what I really like about drumming, is to combine the physical and mental aspects together.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was going to say, do you find those things help? Because, I mean, again, I'm not really a fitness person, but I'm trying my best. But do you find those two complement each other? Like, have you ever had a period when you haven't focused so much on the fitness and you've noticed any issues with the drumming, or have you always been fitness, not regime, that sounds really military, but like, you know, like, have you always kind of prioritized the fitness, and I guess have you never really noticed an issue, or have you ever found an issue with a lack of fitness and finding drumming harder? Or
I would say it's my, both things are my things I love, you know, so it has always been sports and music. So no, I think it's hard to tell for me. I have always done sports and I literally play all the time drums, so it's not,
yeah.
I'm sure they help each other, right, in terms of you just stay healthy, you prevent injuries, not that you get faster. This is, I think it's a wrong way of thinking, but it's rather that by doing sports and knowing how to move your body, and you know, you stretch and you have just a muscle strength, this prevents injuries while you play drums. So I think this is the benefit from it.
Yeah. Do you find as well, I guess it's again because you've never really not been healthy, as it were.
Yeah, guilty on this.
Which again isn't a bad thing. You might think it's a bad thing, but it's not. Like, because you're a fucking hard hitter. Like, do you think the hard hitting side comes from the fitness side as well? Because, you know, generally the dudes that hit hard, I find, because I'm not really a hard hitter, but the dudes that hit hard are usually fitter. Kind of, and I just wondered if it kind of has to go hand in hand, and if you feel like, because you use big sticks, right, as well?
I use
tree trunks, dude.
Yes, it's they're longer and bigger than 2Bs. So
yeah, man, which is crazy. So, and you know, I just wonder if maybe you didn't have the fitness stuff behind you, if you'd be using 5As, and you know you'd be hitting like I do.
I don't know, you know, it's just the way how I feel the music. I was never really thinking about too much, like, I have to hit as hard as I can. It was just, I mean, at the beginnings, okay, when I started to play with Decapitated, it was like, you have to play louder. And so I was kind of in this boot camp of like, go beat the shit off the drums.
Polish boot camp.
Yes. So that's when it all started, and gradually I started to play heavier sticks. But you know, it all comes up to the fact that how you feel comfortable playing, you shouldn't injure yourself, and it's, for me, it's now a sound thing. I could probably hit even harder, but now it's a matter of finding the balance to save energy but still get a good powerful tone out of the drums.
Absolutely, because there is definitely a point where the drums just become like boxes, you know, if you hit them too hard. Because we both, did you record with David at Fascinating? Oh no, it was Jens, right?
No, always with Jens.
But David is the other guy there, and that studio is so cool. I love that place.
Absolutely.
I just love Sweden in general, but that place is amazing. Fascination Street Studios is what we're talking about.
And by Jens the way, Bogren, exactly.
David Castillo. Legendary people. But yeah, David was telling me that he's had drummers in before who on the surface are incredible drummers but actually quite hard to record because they hit the drums so hard that you don't get any tone out of the drum, that it completely destroys it. And it's kind of the opposite of especially when I was younger, I don't know about you, you know, you'd see all these crazy drummers that were just hitting super hard and you just thought, that's the way, that's how you sound good. And then you realize, oh no, there's a middle ground that you have to very carefully find and see.
You have to learn, you know, you have to get experience, and by just playing. And I remember that talking with sound guys, and they're like, why you hit the cymbal so hard? Like, yeah, but it's about to hit hard. Yeah, but to be honest, there is no one in the universe that wants to have cymbals louder.
Yes, yeah, so true. Yeah, exactly.
And then the sound guys come up to you, you know, the room is too small, and can you put some tape on the cymbals? No, I cannot. But then it's too loud.
Oh, dude, yeah, and I've had it, I'm sure you've had it before, where they don't even use the overheads because the room's so small and they can hear the cymbals, especially the ride or something, with us using like the Mega Bell rides and stuff, but they don't even need the, so yeah, exactly, dude. So if you're, and it's, the worst is when all you can hear is cymbals, and I'm sure you've seen and heard drummers play where they hit the cymbals super hard and then tiny little taps on the snare drum.
Correct. But this comes with experience, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's a big... Me and Ash were talking about it last week that mixing yourself is really, really fucking important. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, making...
Recording yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes you realize that, oh, my cymbals are way too loud. Or, you know, my snare's way too quiet, or my snare's way too loud, or I'm hitting my toms way harder than I'm hitting my snare and it sounds odd. And being aware of those kind of, being aware of your own dynamics, I think, is so important as a quote-unquote professional, should we say.
Totally agree. And, of course, it looks impressive when people are just whacking the crap out of their drums and, you know, everything is flying around. But again, it's an instrument, and, you know, with the experience and recording a lot and playing a lot of live shows, it's just you have to pay attention to what other people say. And also, how is it with you? Sometimes I feel like I hit, like, really hard, but then when I look at the videos, I just see, like, the motion is actually not as crazy as I thought it is.
Absolutely. What is that?
I don't know, but then some days I'm like, yeah, I'm really hitting it today, and then you look at the video, like...
Yeah,
that doesn't look impressive at all.
It just looks like you're in your rehearsal room, just kind of half playing, half chilling. Just and you're
exactly.
Like, what? I was trying to go as hard as I could.
Exactly. But nowadays, I don't care about this too much anymore. I just focus on the sound.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think at the end of the day, that's most important. And I think, again, as you said, having experience, especially from sound guys or recording.
Yeah,
I don't know how you felt, but that's been the biggest stuff for me is like when you're in the studio and you record a take and then the producer will tell you something that you hadn't even thought about. You know,
big times.
It'll be like, oh, so, yeah, you hit your 10-inch tom way louder than any of the other toms. You know, can we do that again or can we do it? And I'm like, what? No, I don't.
Yeah, but it's especially Jens Borgren was doing this with the last recording, was like, okay, play the hi-hat a bit more quiet. Don't go so crazy in the hi-hat, but just smash more the crashes, you know, hit them harder. And so it was very strange to adapt to this new situations in the studio. Someone is telling you, okay, try to do it this way. And you're like, ah, okay, right. And he hears it different, you know.
Yeah, and you have to kind of, again, I don't know how you feel about this, but you have to just trust these people.
Sure.
Because they're completely removed from it. We are almost, again, too much in our own head, and we're thinking, no, this is how it has to be. And
yeah,
then,
no, I try to, especially with like big producers as him.
Yeah.
He has something to say, so I better push away my ego and learn from such people.
Yeah, and that's a big part, isn't it? Again, with live sound guys or in the studio, is that kind of, it's that punch to the gut when they're like, oh, yeah, your snare drum was pretty inconsistent today. Maybe you just... And I'm like, oh, really? Did you have to tell me that?
But I must also say that sound guys are very specific. And
that's true. It's a different discipline, isn't it? It's a completely different thing, studio versus live, as far as sound goes, I think.
Definitely. And also, if you ask them if it was a good show, then they would always refer that to their situation on how... was the sound for them. They would not think
that's
about
true. The performance.
Correct.
Yeah. Versus, I guess, engineers and producers, they're more about the performance and the feel as opposed to
correct
the specific technical sound things.
Yes. And it also depends on the sound guy. One guy will tell me, like, play a rimshot on a snare. Other one will say, don't play a rimshot, it's too loud.
So, oh, yeah, that's the worst.
Yeah.
When you're like, it's all rim shots or no rim shots, you're like, what? Why can't I have both?
Yeah. So it really depends, but definitely listening to sound guys and producers will increase your skill level, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And again, increase your experience. And
yes.
I was going to say, well, you mentioned the Polish boot camp. I wanted to remind us both of when we first met. You actually reminded me of this story, or told me about this story. When, what was the club? There's the club in Vienna.
It's in Vienna. It's called Viper Room. It's
Viper
like,
Room. That's the one, dude.
Yes. Viper Room is legendary in Vienna. It's a small venue where you have to go down like a million stairs.
And yeah, I remember that.
It's some sort of a long tunnel. Many bands are playing there, and there can be really cool shows there. Just, yeah. You know, the load in, load out is always tricky
it's
with
not
the
ideal.
Stairs.
Is it a nightclub as well, I'm guessing, not just a venue? It had the vibe of a kind of
nightclub.
Yeah,
it has a bar inside as well, and I think they open it also without the shows. So
Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, so I was playing with Aborted, and we met, I guess it was outside, right? I'm assuming, because I remember it, but I don't remember it vividly, but I remember it happening.
Yeah, it did. I think it was around 2008 or 9, something like this.
That makes sense, yeah. And at that point, you were, you had some stuff up on YouTube at that point, didn't you? But the decapitated thing hadn't happened yet, had it?
No, because I would have been already in Poland. So I'm pretty sure it was around 2008 and 9. I uploaded my first YouTube videos 2007.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was you play with Aborted, and also Textures were playing there.
Oh yeah, Textures, dude. Oh, I love those guys. Amazing.
Exactly. And then we were standing outside and having the nerdy drummer talk. I just remember talking with Steph, drummer from Textures. I was talking about trigger models, whatever.
Yeah, he's amazing, man. I remember learning way too much stuff from him on that tour. It's great.
I saw your videos first. Like, I remember checking you out on YouTube where you explained some double bass and blast beat skills.
The Aborted thing. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. That's funny. Old school.
Old school. Hey, come on. It's good stuff.
It's where we came from. It's where we came from. But yeah, so we met then. And then obviously dude, I remember because. Oh, I remember seeing your videos, firstly, you know, previous to joining Decapitated. And then I remember when that studio video came out, you know, and it was like the kind of behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Decapitated in the studio. And I was just like, fuck, this guy, what the fuck? It completely blew my head off, man. It was unreal. And then obviously you became, slowly and surely, you became the Crim that we all know today. But, was that, like, that must have been, as it was for me, being plucked as just this little YouTube guy, not really a YouTube guy, but, you know, a couple of YouTube videos, being plucked out and playing in Aborted, I'm assuming for you, was it fucking crazy being plucked out and then, boom, you're in Decapitated, especially, you know, especially having relatively big shoes to fill as well.
Yeah, it was very strange experience, and I'm very glad for this boot camp because it was literally because I learned pretty quick that all right, so I will need to change my playing drastically. I will have to step up my game. Yeah, it was like I went there 2009 the first time to meet Vogue and just to play a little bit. Yeah, and,
yeah.
So I was playing like I did in my early YouTube videos, which was quite soft and controlled and everything, and I would just thought like, okay, I know what I'm doing. And I think we played like 5 seconds. He was like, yeah, it's cool, but you have to hit harder. I was like, okay, good. And I hit a bit harder. I was like, no, you have to hit harder. And I was like,
oh shit,
how shall I do that? So when I came back home from that trip, that must have been around summer 2009, I knew that I have half a year until he would stop playing with Vader, because he was helping out Vader.
I see, yeah.
And he wanted to start with Decapitated like fresh from beginning of 2010. So I knew that in half a year I have to step up my game, you know, in terms of velocity and blast beats and stuff. So I made myself pretty crazy, and I was pushing over the limit, and I had to get my thumbs fixed because I had the ligament just got too big inside my thumb by holding the stick too hard, and I tried to push.
So like being too rigid, almost like tensing up.
Yeah, kind of. I don't know. I thought like I can get the craziest velocity out of a blast beat for some weird reason. Don't ask me why. So I was like, I have to grab my stick really hard, and then eventually it happened on both thumbs. So
yeah,
I ended up in the hospital removing some small parts on my thumb in order to make the main ligament to move again.
Oh, man. And this was all while you were trying to kind of get better so that you could play with them in 6 months. Shit, exactly. That's the last thing you needed was surgery, basically.
The first thumb I did before I was going to Poland, and then we started to... So I moved to Poland the beginning of January in 2010.
Yeah.
And from there on, we just started to rehearse every day. And then we played
every day.
Yeah, every day. Every day. It was freezing cold. It was like...
It was Poland in January.
Yeah, but this was a specific winter. That was kind of really crazy.
Oh, my God, man.
So it was around between minus 15, minus 20 on a daily basis. Oh, and we had a practice room without heating.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I have some crazy stories, but it would completely destroy this podcast, because you would need hours for all the crazy stories.
Well, maybe we'll do a part two.
Yes. But just let me tell you that we just practiced so much and tried to be really as tight as we can, because with Decapitated, the only thing we had was like the playing.
Yeah.
No stage outfits, nothing, no corpse paint. You just have to perform as good as you can.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a really good time. And then we played our first tour in the UK. It was just a week long. And when I came home after this tour, I went straight to the hospital and I did my other thumb. And then I had 2 weeks to recover. And then we started to play again. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But I learned from this, you know, I learned from this that I have to watch out, you know.
Was it, and that was from pushing yourself, was it a bad habit that you'd created, or was it forcing something that wasn't natural in a way?
Definitely. There was this one important thing that I didn't give my body the time he needs, you know?
Yeah.
Because this is what sometimes people forget, especially at the beginning or even now as a professional. If you want to learn something new, it just takes time. And sometimes you don't know how long it's going to take. There is no... Yeah. There's no rule. If you practice 6 hours a day, that you will be able to play this in a month. The chances are, if you play 6 hours a day, it's gonna be that after 2 months you're gonna have issues and pain, and you will not play at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And your limbs and your body's just gonna say, "Nope, I've had enough now."
And this is what happened to me in this case, and it happened to me afterwards again. So, for me, the problem is always that the mind is much stronger than my body.
Yeah, yeah.
And I forget to respect limits.
The body.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Is that, is it out of wanting to do better, or is it just kind of, is it not even conscious? Like when you knew you had 6 months with Decapitated, were you just like head down, didn't think about it, I need to do this? Or were you kind of, you didn't make a plan, or did you make a plan? Sorry, did you make a plan? And you were like, by this point, this needs to happen, and by this point, or were you just like, fuck it, head down. I need to just do whatever I can, no rest.
Exactly. The goal was like, play as loud as you can, play as fast as you can,
as fast as you can,
till January the 1st, or what is it, 3rd of January? I moved, so I knew that. Okay, that's the goal, and let's go.
So that was the plan, was play as hard as you can and as fast as you can until January the 3rd.
Yes.
And you ended up in hospital.
I ended up, you know, fixing both of my thumbs, so.
Oh, damn, dude. Fuck. I guess, again, you learned from this, obviously.
Yeah, I never had to have any operation because of drumming.
Yeah.
I had issues, health issues because of drumming, and I just, but it was typical overplaying or... Mm. Yeah, just new movements, something. Again, I didn't give my body enough time to rest.
Yeah. Have you ever had issues with the swivel stuff that you do? Ever cause issues for your legs or your knees or ankles or anything?
No, honestly not. I sometimes feel a little bit on my left knee when I have to play on a very bouncy drum riser.
Oh, they're the worst anyway, aren't they?
They are the fucking worst. Feels like you cannot play at all. All your technique is going out of the window. It's like, fuck, survival mode, let's go.
playing on a sponge or something.
Yeah, exactly.
It just sucks.
But I know that this is because of a muscle issue, not because of the joint. I know that this this is because my quad is just pulling too much on the knee.
Mm.
And with a little bit of stretching, it's going away.
Yeah, and it's the age-old thing of this kind of drumming is relaxation. You know, muscles need to be relaxed for them to perform.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Optimum. So, and I guess if you're in a situation, like you said, on a bouncy riser or something, or that muscle's not relaxed because it's tense because you're trying to, you know, make it work in a not ideal situation.
Oh, yeah, you feel like, what's going on? Is the spring turned tighter? Is the beater further back? Like, no, it's the drum riser. Yeah. Nobody knows that, but you on stage are like dying.
Yeah, exactly. And these are the small things that you learn as you go. And I'm sure you must have had a few of these jumping into Decapitated from kind of, not obscurity, I guess, but, you know, it was a big leap for you, I guess, wasn't it, from previously no Decapitated to Decapitated. And
big
you just
times.
Get chucked into these situations, don't you, where you're just like, shit, no one told me about this. Bouncy drum riser, what?
Yeah, nobody told me about that. I have to play that crap every day on a tour. And I'm like, how is this humanly even possible? And then, but again, this is all you have to play. You have to, especially playing live, for me was the best experience I could make.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because every day, different sound, different environment, mostly different drum kit, especially if you play on rental kits.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you have every day a changeover and you have to fix your drum setup in like 20 minutes and you just have to pull it off. These are things that if you would have told me back in 2007, I wouldn't believe. I was so naive that like, yeah, I'm going to bring my snare. I'm going to bring my pedals, my chair, and my cymbals, like half of the drum set on tour. And then I was like,
exactly.
We have 23 kilo. You have one luggage, but I have to bring my snare. No, you're going to use whatever is there.
Yeah.
Okay.
But how do I know what's there? Well, you don't. But
you don't.
What? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, no, Decapitated definitely was, for me, for my drumming style and in general, yeah, for me as a musician also, it was really important. It was like going to university.
And I guess as well, like a fast track in a lot of ways, because again, you got kind of dropped into it.
I got dropped into it and I was like, fuck, you have to really work your ass off to make this somehow work. And yeah, but...
But yeah, and again, I guess you wouldn't be the crim you are today without...
Looks like. It looks like it paid off.
Yeah, exactly. And then what was the period in between Decapitated and Septic Flesh? How long was that kind of...
And that was a couple of years, you know, after I finished Decapitated. With playing with Decapitated, I just knew that I have to be busy doing music, you know.
Yeah.
It was a bit strange because it was Decapitated was my first band, my first professional band, and somehow I was really afraid of doing this move because I felt like I'm destroying my dream.
Yeah.
You know, like there's not going to be any other band and that's it. I had once this time and then bye-bye. But
yeah,
I kind of knew that I have to be busy in order to and like keep playing music.
Mm.
So I focused on the solo project stuff in the meanwhile and some session jobs. And then the Behemoth thing happened.
Yeah, dude. Once again, those videos, when they came out, I was like, fuck, man.
But this was even worse than Decapitated because there was literally like just a couple of days from 0 to 100, switch your drumming style and play this crazy stuff. And I was like, how shall I do it? And that was again a moment where I pushed too hard. You know, I had issues with my hip and I couldn't feel my leg on the first show. Like,
fuck,
it was all tingly and, you know, it was not... played very well, obviously, but it's just like crazy. I knew that again when I say no to that, it's like I will never get the chance again.
Yeah, exactly. And I think because I've talked about this with another friend that it's in our industry, it's not like, you know, oh, I'll quit my job, but I can find another one. You know, like, I can't think of an example, but, you know, if you're like a, I don't know, a plumber maybe or something. No offense to any plumbers. Obviously, I don't want to offend anybody in this. But if, you know, if you quit your job at one firm, you can probably, I assume, find a job at another firm or another, you know, another plumbing company.
Yeah, definitely.
As a professional musician, it's a bit, especially when you get, you know, we've been incredibly lucky that we've got to the, in the situations we're in. And if you remove yourself from those situations, it's like, well, there's no guarantee that you're ever going to do that again. So.
Yes, you said it exactly. And there's this fear with every decision you make. And the fear of not getting another chance, but also the fear when you say yes, like what you put yourself into. Are you able to do it? Because it's always a challenge, right? But sometimes it feels like it's almost impossible to make it happen. And then you have to jump over your own... how to say, fears, and you just have to really push over your limits.
Yeah, and talk to yourself in your brain and kind of remind yourself that you can do it. It's going to be okay.
You can do it, and you just try to survive. And that was was how I did it with Behemoth. And then eventually, you know, time has passed, and I felt more comfortable with their songs, and so the shows obviously got better.
Yeah.
And yeah, so... because of this Behemoth, like I got the Behemoth job because of playing with Decapitated and Behemoth one tour, and they saw me back then that I was, you know, trying to do my job as good as I can and try to be professional.
Yeah.
And so.
And obviously, you're an amazing drummer, so that helps.
It looks like it helped. Thank you. But you know, one thing leads to the other. So then the Behemoth thing happened because of that. And after Behemoth, I was again without a band, and I was like, you know, but now, okay, I have to keep busy. And I was on my, I don't know, because I just played with Behemoth, which is a monster band. I was like, okay, everything is possible. And then this news with Slipknot popped up, and I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to just record some videos just for fun. Who knows?
Because
who
why
knows?
Not?
Exactly.
Exactly, dude.
Then this blew up kind of, and then the Septic Flesh thing started in 2015. That's when I joined them. And again, it was because of, you know, Nurgle. He kind of put the contact together between me and Septic Flesh.
Okay, I never realized that. And this goes back to everything as well in I hate using the word industry, but it is an industry, I guess, isn't it?
It is an industry.
Unfortunately, it is an industry. It's not... Well, no, it is what you know as well, but it's who you know. Like, networking is so unbelievably important, and being a nice person as
Yeah, respectful. You have to be respectful, you know?
Exactly. You have to understand dynamics, I think, within groups. You know, like, you wouldn't just walk into Behemoth and be like, fuck you guys, I'm Krim, I'm a legend.
No, definitely not.
You'd be like, okay, I know my place here. I'm gonna be as respectful as I can, do as good a job as I can, do the best that I can, and that's kind of all you can do as a musician, isn't it, really? Do the job as best you can, be as respectful as you can.
Yeah.
Be as cool a person to hang out with as you can. Don't be a diva and
No, never be a diva. Be respectful. That's what I learned right at the beginning. Even if there are people that you cannot get along too well, because this happens, but just try to do everything with respect. And it is a business, and the business is talking with each other, and it's all connected. So you better not piss on anyone's leg, because it might backfire on you.
Yeah, don't burn any bridges, because you never know who's gonna you never know next year who's gonna be the headliner, or who's gonna be the tour manager, or who's gonna be, you know,
correct.
You're an asshole to that person. It's like, oh no, now they're tour managing the headline band. Oh shit.
Yeah, you know, these are things which are kind of important, and you know,
they're big learning curves, aren't they? And as far as just bringing back to the Behemoth thing quickly before I move on my notes, but was that a situation where you had to say yes? Was there anything in your mind that was like, nah, I don't know if I can do it, or were you just like, I don't care if I can't do it, or I don't care if I don't think I can do it, I have to do it?
To be honest, I got the call from Orion and he was pretty straightforward. He was like, yeah, listen, this is the situation. Inferno is in the hospital and, you know, we have to play certain shows. And the first show is going to be in 10 days. It's on an open-air festival in Warsaw, so in Poland. And it's like 14 songs. But we play them different than on the CD, so I suggest you to check out the latest Bloodstock video on YouTube and learn from there. Can you do it? God. I'm like, I just shed my pants at this moment, more or less. I told him, like, you know what, please, I will tell you, give me a couple of minutes, or let me think, I will tell you the latest tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, and then I hang up the phone, and I was like, again, fuck. Am I really able to do that?
Yeah.
And I was a little bit worried, not a little bit, a lot worried that I cannot do it. But then again, I was like, this is probably a chance. You have to say yes. It was the same moment when I got the email on MySpace from Vogue back in the days.
MySpace, fucking hell.
MySpace. Yep. Like,
old school.
When it was, do you want to be part of the audition for Decapitated? And these are the moments where I knew you have to do it.
Yeah, yeah, and you have to make it work somehow.
I had shivers, you know, when I called Orion again. I was like, okay, I do it. Or actually, I think I wrote him an SMS. I said, okay, I'm in. And the moment I just pressed send, I still have shivers now because it was like...
thinking about the gravity of the situation.
Yeah, literally. Because the second after I pushed send, I went to the laptop, I turned on YouTube, and I just ripped down the audio track.
Yeah,
from
yeah.
Bloodstock. And I was sitting down because I don't know how to read sheets, like sheet music.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just wrote down song structure, like... blast beat three times, tom break, then double bass or like Slayer, dupa dupa groove. So I had to learn the songs as much as I could. And I remember I had actually no practice room at that time.
Wow.
So I was like, how shall I do it? And I asked some friends if I can use their little garden house in the back just to play.
Yeah.
And they agreed because I told them it's just for 1 week, you know, let me just... So I went straight immediately there. I tried to play it till I couldn't play anymore. I went back home. I ate. I slept. I woke up again after 1 hour. I went back to the room, played again.
Damn, dude.
I did this for a couple of days until it was complete shutdown.
What, your body and brain just kind of...
Yes.
...gave in?
Because I needed to learn it faster than 10 days because we had rehearsal before.
Yeah, obviously. Of course. Yeah, the show was in 10 days. So you had probably, what, like 7 days pretty much to learn everything? Seven or eight days. Fuck.
And then I was like, okay, good. Time was flying and I tried to squeeze in as much as I could. And then we started to rehearse. And yeah, they liked it. But, you know, of course, we had to get better and better. And
of course, yeah.
Then eventually you had the health issues, of course, also together with this pure fear of destroying my career by butchering everything I do live. Because this is the truth, you know, it's not something you just do easily like that. It's not something, and I'm sure you agree with me, you don't have always everything ready. I am not always ready to play as fast as I have done in the past, you know, or it always depends what I did the last year or month.
Yeah.
And the playing is changing all the time. So jumping in between different metal drumming styles, I find it very difficult. I always need time to adjust.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's natural because I think we're similar in the mindset that if you want to be if you want to truly pull something off or be truly good at it, you have to completely immerse yourself.
Yeah.
And that has to, like, if you want it to be genuine, that has to be all you listen to and all you play. Because again, when I'm in anything I've done before, it's just like, I remember specifically learning the Heaven Shall Burn stuff because that was relatively short time, not fucking 10 days, but
it was short, and it was
quite a short amount of time, and I remember just the way I learn is I don't know why, again, I can't read, but I just drive around in my car and I listen to the songs
in the car.
Yeah, I think it's because there's no distractions in the car.
Yeah, but that's a good idea.
So I just drive for as long as I need to, and I just listen to the songs over and over and over and over and over and over again. And again, like, it's all I listened to. It's all I played. Again, I didn't have 10 days. I had, like, a month or something. But again, I think... Yeah, and then, sorry, transitioning out of Heaven Shall Burn to go into Carcass, I was in Heaven Shall Burn mode. I was just like, taka-duka, 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 taka-duka.
Yeah, I totally feel you.
And then, you know, Carcass is like Groove. And I was like, huh? Groove? What are you talking about?
You know, so yeah, yeah.
I think it's completely... I mean, again, I think with the way we probably approach it, it sounds like you're the same. You have to completely, you know, it has to be everything for you to feel like you're doing it justice and to feel like you're doing it as best as you can.
Exactly. And this, again, includes giving yourself the time to adapt to this new style.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's small changes, small details, but, you know, for some people from the outside, they just expect you to be able to do everything all the time.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But it's not the case. Also, when I am going to my solo project and I write my own songs, it's a completely different drumming style than I would do with other bands. And it also needs time for me to get used to it again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's brought me on to the next thing very nicely that I wanted to talk about. Look at that.
Nice transition.
We're both professionals here, dude.
Yes.
Because I wanted to talk about writing as well and writing... writing drum parts specifically, with Decapitated, was that how much of that were you allowed to have control over, and how much of that was either everyone else in the band or Vog, or were you a large part in the actual creation of the drum parts?
It was mixed. You know, the cool thing is with Vog that he has a really good musical point of view, not only talking about guitar playing, but also drumming. And he taught me a lot of, like, no, you should play it like this way and that way. So I came up with own ideas. Certain ideas were still back from VTech, so we incorporated them.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, and I remember that Vog always told me, like, don't play exactly the same as the guitar. And I guess because it's the fact that we had only one guitar, drums and bass, and that's it. And he wanted to kind of play together, but not play identical. Yeah, so he was like, play something that fits, but don't follow 100% the rhythm of the guitar on the kick drum, for example, which would be the obvious thing to do, right?
Yeah, especially in our type of music. That's kind of...
Correct. It's like
traditional thing, yeah.
Yeah, so... And I remember that he mentioned it a couple of times. No, just try to make your own thing in a way, you know? Like, I talk my language and you... Like, it's a dialogue.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah. That's so, a good way of putting it, yeah.
I learned... Like, there was a different approach I was never thinking about and before. So I learned this from him. So, and with Septic Flesh now, it is... That when the guys are writing a song, they have a very basic programmed drum groove with like certain accents. Usually it's not something I would play at all like this, but I kind of understand what they're looking for.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So I would try to present them drum grooves that would like has my own character, but also give them what they want in a way.
Yeah, yeah. Keep them happy as much as you can.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. And we, with my solo project, of course, I have completely freedom and I do whatever I want, whatever comes in my mind. So,
yeah, I was going to say with your solo stuff, do you find, because I listened to the Shapes EP the other day, which is fucking awesome, dude. But I didn't listen to it when you first released it. And, yeah, I only just listened to it the other day. It was one of those where I was like, oh, I need to check that out. And then I just didn't until the other day. But it's completely very different to what I was expecting because, you know, you've had moments of that on your previous stuff. But that whole EP is like kind of, it's like soundtrack music almost.
It's just acoustic, you know.
Yeah, and it was that kind of, is that, do you feel like, is that your release? your creative, like your solo projects? Is it just like, I'm going to do whatever I want?
Yes, 100%.
If it's an acoustic, if it's a funk album, I'll make a funk album. Or if it's
you exactly say it as it is, you know? It has always been my creative outlet. I never, that's why I also not signed to any label or anything. Mm. It is more or less this need of being creative. And the only rule I set myself is like, do something I have not done before. So,
nice.
If it's like working with vocalists, or you know, making an instrumental album, or making now this acoustic EP, I want that every album is a different thing, is a new chapter, something else.
Yeah,
and I'm not afraid to mix things, styles. You know.
And you've just been working on a new one, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm working pretty intensively the last month on that, and it goes really quick. I'm very happy about it. To be honest, we finished recording just on last week or so, and we started with the mixing actually now.
Wow, that has moved quick. Because when we first started talking about this podcast, I think you were still recording vocals, maybe? Or not you, but...
yeah. Vocals, yeah. Exactly. It was the last thing, but I wrote the mixing. Whole album in like a month or so. So
wow. And is it, once again, is it a completely different kind of vibe to what you've done before, or is there some similar stuff and some different stuff?
It is a metal album, so it is, of course, you can hear the Cream DNA in it.
Yeah,
but again, I try to be more creative, make it a bit more complex, make it sometimes a little bit more darker. It's definitely the next step. So all the people that are involved, or I have played it to, said that okay, wow, they didn't expect this. And I wanted to make an album that is gonna need a little bit of time in order to appreciate it. Like, I don't want to give them the quick fix.
Yeah, no. Absolutely. And they're the best albums though, aren't they? Like, I mean, I'm sure you'll agree that some of the best albums ever are ones that you hear them first and you're like, yeah. And then you force yourself to listen to them more, and then they become the best albums you've ever heard.
Definitely. So for me, it was like, okay, I don't care about anything. I just play how I feel. And if it's going to be this direction, I'm going to do it. Fuck it. I don't care what other people say about it. And if people will need time to appreciate it, it's actually, that's what I want. I want them to sit down and listen to it and just, you know, be absorbed by the music. That's my way of thinking. I don't know how it's going to be in the end. They have to listen. It goes really quick. And
I was going to say, that's pretty quick to write a full album as well.
Oh yeah.
I guess you haven't had quite as many distractions as normal though. Or did you write it during COVID times?
Well, it was in September I kind of decided, okay, I want to write an album, and in October it was written.
You don't mess around.
No, but it's kind of strange with me with the solo project. It can be like years of nothing, you know, and then it's always these moments when they open up, then I know I can write everything in a month.
Yeah, but so previously, has it taken around a month as well, or the previous stuff? The previous
kind album? Of to have the basic thing, and then you know I worked out demos and I tried to you know work on layers and everything.
Yeah,
and then I sent it to my friend who does vocals, and I was like, okay, can you imagine doing vocals this time on the full album? And I gave it to him, and he was a little bit intimidated because he compared it to other stuff I did before, and he thought like, okay, it's gonna be easy. And then I presented him this, and he was like, I don't know, how shall I do it? But he did.
Wow.
He did
perfect. That's cool, man.
He did really well. So
I'm excited to hear that. That's cool. That's really cool. And it's something nice for you, I guess, out of all this. A nice positive out of all this. You've managed to record, write and release another solo album, which is very cool.
Yes, of course. And I never know if it's going to be the last album or not. It always depends how is my mood and how much time I have. And now it just felt like, it's going to be another one.
And again, as you say that, that's the joy of the freedom of it, the kind of creative freedom. You can do what you want or just don't do anything.
Yeah, or don't do anything. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. But as far as when you're writing solo project or with Septic Flesh or previously with Decapitated or whoever, do you find ideas, do you have specific ideas and they stay the same? Or like from when they're written to when you go in the studio, or do you have kind of a buffer of like improvisation? Do you have things that you just like to kind of figure out in the studio or figure out on the fly in the moment, or do you like to be relatively rigid with what you're going to play before you record and when you're writing?
Now I work even more on demos in order to be prepared as good as possible for the studio. But, you know, for me, it's like this. The more I play this stuff, the more natural it feels like. The more I can focus in the studio on, like, not so much what I play, but, like, how I play. I can focus on the sound I create. And for me, it's important to literally, like, be absorbed by the material and record demos and play it over and over and over again. But so I want to be prepared. I want to know what I have to record in the studio, like certain accents and certain grooves. I know it's going to be the same.
Yeah.
But drum feels, or now with Jens, when he's like, you know what, this is a cool beat, but make it a bit more fancy. Maybe you can add a bit more of kick drum stuff, or
yeah,
we need a different transition to the next part. Because for me as a listener, it feels a little bit like it needs something else. So
then
I come up with this on the fly. But it depends also on who you work with. Some producers, they don't say anything. They just let you record. They will just say like, okay, it was a little bit drag, or it was too much in front of the click.
Yeah.
Others, they want to be more involved. It's like, it was cool, but maybe you can do some fancier stuff on the cymbals.
Yeah, yeah.
But to just say it in a summary, I always want to be prepared as good as I can. I use demo state and the whole rehearsals stuff before the recording for the actual time to figure out things, what works and what not.
As much as you can. Yeah,
yes, and I record it with Septic Flesh. I recorded it first MIDI, and then afterwards I moved it to the real drums, and then I recorded in real drums in order to understand how the dynamics work on the real drums. And then it was like, yeah, it's cool, but Seth told me, our vocalist, you should make it more, imagine like an artist with a pen. He said it like this, and you just paint a picture, make it more, you know, with different colors and make it more flow and dynamics. It's like, okay, good. That means I cannot play too static.
Too rigid, yeah. Kind of combine the ideas a bit more fluidly,
yeah,
instead of just like this bit and then into this bit and then into this bit.
Correct. So it was like, all right, what can I do here at this part? Can I add something more or not? So, and again, this is what I said before, like I know kind of what I want to play. The basic is the same, but the details and like how I play it, you know, with the dynamics, this is something I can focus on.
And this all goes back to what we were saying earlier with sound and mixing yourself and how you play performance, all that kind of stuff. That stuff,
yeah,
because I'm sure you feel this too, like when you're first learning a song or writing a song, it's just when you first record it, those first kind of demos on acoustic kit or electronic kit, they're just kind of meh.
Of course they're meh, because you just try to figure out what kind of works. You
know? Exactly. And it's a just, blast no beat.
No commitment at all. It's just like figure out ideas, listen to it like, ah, that's crap, or this is cool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yes, so I've realized I've been talking we've been talking for a long time. So I'm going to move on to the end-ish section, because I've got a fun thing. I've got a fun thing I want to do at the end, and I don't want to keep you up too late.
That's okay.
Because I know you get up early. I get up early too, but for different reasons. fucking kids. No, I love my kids. Anyway, so I'm really intrigued to hear your kind of relationship with YouTube and social media, because, you know, for both of us, again, you more so than me, but YouTube has been a massive stepping stone for us. You know, I wouldn't be in Aborted without it. I wouldn't have been in Aborted without it. And then because of Aborted, with the networking, I wouldn't be where I am now, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, same for you. Or MySpace, I guess it was, as you said.
No, it was YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. It all stems around YouTube. But do you see, do you feel comfortable with that being like an important part of your career, or do you not like that aspect of things, or do you still enjoy, you know, because you know you still put out videos and stuff. I watched the one where you did the old, you know, your one of your original videos where you played the Slipknot cover. That was so good, man. I loved that so much, dude. Is that kit, you know, the Pearl, the Masters?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not Masters. What is it? Export, sorry, yeah. The Purple Export. Is that the one that you used in the Slipknot videos too?
Yeah, definitely. That's my first drum kit.
Dude, I love that as well. There's a story there.
Of course there's a story.
There's a progression.
That's me, like, in 2005, playing for 2 years and just, you know, doing nothing else and play drums and just loving it.
I got to say, though, you know, you said the drumming wasn't very good, but, dude, for saying you'd only been playing a couple of years, that was really good.
It was okay. It was definitely not bad, but, you know, it's not, how do I say it? Now, of course, the standard is a little bit different.
Yeah, of course. You're older and wiser now with more practice behind you. But yeah, do you feel like, do you feel kind of comfortable with having that side of yourself, you know, like the YouTube following and the social media stuff? Like, do you feel that that's important, and do you like that side of things, and or would you rather do without it?
No, I'm grateful for the fact that, you know, social media and especially YouTube gave me the chance to, you know, become a drummer in this business and be recognized as a drummer. So for me, I do, of course, still enjoy making videos. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And I also do understand that it is just an important tool for us musicians nowadays. It's part of our job. So I'm okay with it. But the only issue I have is just the quantity of it. What I mean is that at one point, you know, the day has only 24 hours, and if you want to practice a lot and you have to do videos and you have to write emails back and you have to make posts and you have to make maybe trailers for the videos that come up.
Yeah.
It's just like it doesn't end with one thing. In the past, there was maybe YouTube and you could just upload it. One camera, shitty sound, no color grading whatsoever. You just, whatever. Nowadays, I'm like, okay, I'm tuning the drums, I just check the lightning, I set up the cameras, I check with my iPad how is the angle of the camera.
It's like a movie.
Exactly. Then I try to record it, then I do, you know, the editing there, I do the color grading, I do some small zoom in bullshit. So it's so much more work that has to be done as the standard is going up. And this ultimately eats more time of your day, and this is something that will not change. You cannot.
Yeah, it's only
going to
get worse, I guess.
Yeah,
if worse is the word. Better
and
or worse, however you see it.
Correct. And now I have this issue. I feel a little bit on the borders of what is possible for me to do, like everything on my own, like making. I'm also late with like writing back people on Facebook or whatsoever, because it's just like too much. It's just all at once.
There's only so many hours in a day, and you have a life to live as well.
I have a life to live, and I have to focus on my instrument as well, you know, because I'm a musician. I'm not a social media influencer.
And that's, you know, that in it just by itself without all the other stuff takes up a lot of time.
Yeah, it's brutal, but I'm aware of the fact that it's important, and I don't want to not do it at all. It's just, again, at one point it gets too much, and I just feel a bit overwhelmed by the fact that you barely can make it happen on your own if you want to be active on everything and everywhere and practice and get better and and, you know?
Yeah. And this is in a time when there's no tours happening as well. So, when there's tours on top, it's going to be even tougher. But
you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's, I think this is for me why I've always kind of, I haven't avoided it, but I think because I haven't been able to juggle, I haven't been able to multitask in the way that it requires. It just hasn't been able. I haven't been able to do it because I can't find the time to do all those things, and I didn't have the knowledge about, you know, because I know you have to, angles and lighting and, I know basics about miking up drums and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to cameras, I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, these are skills that you learn as well. But now I'm literally, I have a couple of videos edited already that I will probably release in like a couple of months from now on. So whenever I have time, I try to work ahead, if this is how to say it.
Yeah.
Because I know that later on I might not have the time, but I just create certain content and have it ready for later on.
Give yourself that buffer almost.
Yeah, this buffer. Mm. And I'm contemplating now in this situation as we're all in, if like a Patreon thing would be something cool to do. But on the other hand, again, I know what it means. It means making more content, and I'm a bit afraid of it.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that. Yeah, with one thing comes the other, almost.
Yeah, on the other hand, I do make a lot of content, and I think I could probably do it. But again, I have a life besides that too.
Yeah.
And social media is a good place, but also can be frustrating and sometimes dangerous because it leads you in wrong direction sometimes. It shows only the glory of everything, never the downside.
Absolutely, yeah, which is kind of tough, especially if you're having a bad day and you scroll through and you just see like 20 people winning and you're like, oh, I'm not winning, screw you.
Exactly. So that's the kind of negative side a bit of it, but overall I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and I think like me and my wife were talking about this recently, that in a lot of ways, there's a lot of negatives about, once again I'm using that word, the industry these days. Record sales and blah, 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 blah. No one makes money off of album sales anymore and all that stuff. But in equal amounts of other ways, it's actually a lot better because, me and you right now can get our music, drumming, whatever we want, out to thousands, thousands more people than we ever could have back in even 15 years ago. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
So in that way, it's 10 times better because you can reach so many more people, which is obviously just unbelievable with technology and all that stuff. But the issue is, it's making it sustainable, as you said, because all of this stuff takes time. and also, just finding balance, finding the balance between doing what you actually love, which is playing the drums, and practicing your instrument and creating music. I guess, there is an enjoyment in creating videos and stuff.
Definitely.
I'm sure.
It's like another form of creativity. That's why I still like doing it. You can also get better, and it's fun and joy to know how to do the editing and work on different color grading. And it's another art form, another creativity.
Exactly. And that's, but again, it's,
as, it's work.
Exactly, and as with drumming is endless, I'm sure all that stuff is also endless as well.
It is endless, and what else it is, because we are drummers, our gear, the amount of gear we need is already ridiculous and pricey. But then you look for microphones and you're like, fuck, I need so many microphones for drums. Then you pay that, then you need the big audio interface, then you need a lot of cameras. It's like adds up all the time.
Exactly.
Sometimes I question myself, are drums really the best instrument to choose? In these terms, probably not. I mean, it's just sick to play it, but otherwise it's like, fuck.
It's not just drums either. It's metal drums specifically, because we very rarely have small kits.
First of all, and then sometimes I feel like I see jazz drummers, you know, and you just know yeah. that their sticks are like 5 years old.
You know? And they've never changed their heads.
Like, never. Like, yeah. The snare head is still from the 80s, okay?
Oh, I do like the Megabell cymbals and whatever that we use, the big cymbals we use, like... Jazz drummers have the lightest, thinnest cymbals too.
Just like, yeah, they have one, like, of them.
Yeah, it's like carrying around air. Like the Megabell ride I've got is like 3.5 kilos, 4 kilos, plus all the other shit that's in my cymbal case. It makes it like 20 kilo cymbal case.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. I really sit very often at home like, this is so fucking stupid what we're all doing here. Why? But it's like, go big or go home, I guess.
Yeah, oh, dude. Yeah, absolutely. And I have moments where I'm just like, I couldn't do anything else. Like, this is the only type of music I want to play because it's so ridiculous in the best way.
Yes. It's becoming ridiculously amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. But yeah, we wouldn't do it if we didn't love it, despite all the crazy shit.
Oh, yes.
And the hardships.
Otherwise, bye-bye. That's the wrong thing for you to do.
Yeah, and I think, again, I'd like to hear your opinion on this, but I've been in situations before where... I won't name names for bands because I don't know who may or may not listen to this, but...
Smart move, my friend.
Diplomatic, never burn bridges. But I've been in situations before a couple of times where, on paper... I'm living the dream, you know.
Yeah.
Successful touring band, making some money, endorsements. And I've got a very specific memory, which I still remember now. Again, I'm not going to mention the band, but I was in the back of a van. I think it was a van. But we're driving to a hotel. Again, hotel. Do you know what I mean? Like, living the dream.
Yes.
I shouldn't complain about anything. Incredibly lucky. And I was just looking up at the sky. It was nighttime. And I was like, I'm so unhappy. I hate this. And soon after, I moved on. But at that time, again, as you said, in my head, I was like, what happens if I never get another gig after this? But I was so desperately unhappy. And I just couldn't, you know, I couldn't find any happiness in it.
Yeah, yeah,
and
sure.
And you realize that, again, you need to do stuff that you enjoy. It doesn't matter if it pays well or it doesn't pay well or if it's, you know, if... A lot of people think it's crappy and only you think it's good. Like, you need to be happy, and happiness is the only way that you're going to, I'd say, quote unquote, make it, is by actually enjoying the process and enjoying the thing that you do and the thing that you show people, because otherwise you're just going to be kind of faking the whole thing and not presenting yourself and just being desperately unhappy.
Yeah. Which... And the people will notice this, you know. Mm.
Absolutely. It's fake.
It's fake, and people are... Because music is, it's a sort of emotion, you know, it's language, it's some sort of emotion, it's a connection between people, and if you're not... I always felt like I have to be 100% who I am, not fake anything. Mm. And I believe that people will feel that in your music and in the way how you are as an artist, because art is so fueled by... who you are and by your emotions.
Mm. Experiences and all that stuff.
Definitely. Yeah. So, yeah. And again, as you said, you have to be happy on your own, right? You have to be happy with the situation. I mean, you're going to be, in the end, you're the one that has to live with yourself all the time, right?
Yeah, 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 yeah. You're the only one that has to, really.
Everyone else can say bye-bye. I don't like you anymore, but you cannot just walk away from yourself, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So be happy, kids.
Yeah, be happy. But yeah, it's, of course, there are moments where you're like, fuck, why do this? And you just, you know, you're tired. And as you said, you sit in the van, you drive in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the night to some crappy hotel where you probably sleep all six of you in one room because you just booked only one room. Crap.
For
like
3 hours.
For 3 hours, exactly. Yeah. And you just question a lot at these moments. But then, again, you should imagine yourself, if you would sit at home and you would wake up on Monday and you work till Friday and you do this over and over again and you have this normal life that most people have, and you're like, nah, I wouldn't be happy either. So
yeah, you have to realize how lucky you
suck
are.
Suck it. And yeah. Do it.
Exactly. Realize how lucky you are, motherfucker.
Yeah. Be lucky that you play on this shitty rental kit and it's all falling apart.
With old jazz heads.
Yeah. Or the best was once in Greece on Greek tour, I had, you know, the kick drum patches you put on the head in order to save it a little bit, like to protect it. I was looking at this rental kit and I'm like, what the fuck is that? And then I just took it off because it was just with tape on there. And it took the menu from the bar and they just cut a piece off and it just taped it on there because it was laminated and so it said like Metaxa or whiskey or something, like €3 or whatnot a shot. So this was like a kick patch and you like question yourself, what the fuck is going on?
What am I doing here?
Yeah, but like I love my job. I'm gonna play as good as I can.
Oh, dude, yeah. Have you had it? One of the worst is, have you had it where the kick patch is just gaffer tape?
Yeah, yeah. And the best is when you have two different kick drums. One is 20-inch and one is 22-inch. I had everything. I had literally everything.
Just gaffer tape as a patch. The minute you hit it, the gaffer tape splits and it just becomes sticky.
Yeah.
And you're just like,
I had this.
Okay, great. So every time I hit the kick drum, the beat is just going to stick to the head.
It's horrible. These are all things people that are listening to right now. These are
They're
all
like,
things.
Boo-hoo.
No, but that's what's happening. And if you're in this situation, you would understand our crying.
Yeah, exactly. It's all relative to your reality, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
But oh god, yeah. I mean, I look.
But you know what? I miss
tape kick drums.
Yes, I would even now play on a gaffer tape kick drum.
Same.
Fuck that.
We're kind of sick, aren't we? We're sick in the head a little bit because we want it so much.
I had this once, you know, on a show that we had this problem that there was this kick drum patch, but it got removed and it got moved a bit higher. But so we shared the drum kit, and my beater was hitting always on the glue from the patch from before.
Oh no.
And I have baby powder next to me for the swivel thing, so I have a bit slippery surface. So I just put baby powder on this fucking glue after every song. But of course then I went through this layer of baby powder and it was sticky again, but that kind of made me play through it. So it was like, it was thought like I'm putting cocaine on the drum head, but it was just baby powder.
And it's just like flying everywhere, like Scarface.
It's like, that's a cool show effect. No, I just want to survive.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't want my beaters to stick to the head anymore.
Yeah.
Oh man. See, and this is what, you know, this is what we dreamed of as teenagers. So we got
It's okay. It's okay.
It's not what we dreamed of, it's what we got.
Yeah, let's put it this way.
Oh, but yeah, we wouldn't have it any other way. Oh, right. So I've got a fun thing that I came up with. It might not be fun. I think it might be quite fun.
Okay, but, bring it.
Do you know, you must know the either or game where I give you two things.
I'll say A or B.
Yeah, and you have to say which one you prefer. So I've got a few general life ones. And then I've got some music and drum-related ones.
Okay, let's see.
I'm going to try not to do anything too tricky that could set you up for talking shit about someone. So.
Please, it's always it's a thin line, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Right, so should we do this? You ready?
Yeah, let's try it.
All right, I'm just going to save. Right, cool. So, coffee or tea?
Tea.
Ooh. Morning or evening? I think
morning.
We know this one.
Yeah, come on. That's easy.
Okay. Summer or winter?
Winter.
Oh, you're a winter guy.
Big times.
Do you not like summer at all?
No. It has 16 it has 16 degrees in my flat. It's I like really winter, you know. I like the snow. Wow. I like when it's cold. It feels like my mind is more fresh. So yeah.
It's snowing like crazy, right, as well in Austria at the moment.
For this winter, to be honest, yes. We have winter right now, like snow right now, but I think it's gone tomorrow.
Do you usually get pretty crazy snow over there?
We used to. Climate change, hello.
See. Recycle, everybody.
Yeah.
Okay, so what did I just do? Summer, winter. Beach or forest?
Forest.
Oh, black metal.
Big times.
Right. So, chips or chocolate?
Chips.
What? Are you more of a savory snack person? Do you not really like sweet stuff? Or do you like sweet stuff?
I like both. I like to eat first sweet, and then I want something salty, and then I eat something sweet, and then I want something salty.
The never-ending cycle. Yin and yang.
Yeah, but now, as I don't eat much sweets, I just say chips.
Yeah, okay. Meat or vegetables?
Vegetables.
Yeah, I'd agree with that one too. All right, this one should be interesting. YouTube or Instagram?
YouTube.
Okay. Any reason why specifically?
Yeah, because YouTube is just... It's more information than just showing off.
you can learn shit on YouTube. You can't learn a huge amount on Instagram.
And you have time to show something, right? I mean, okay, now you can put on longer videos on Instagram, but still it will always have this 1 minute feeling, you know, like 1 minute long videos feeling.
You have to edit yourself. Yeah, exactly. Right, this one is quite specific to you. Running or press-ups?
Press-ups. I hate running, but I still do it.
I was going to say, don't you run loads? Aren't you like a big runner?
No, I hate it, but I still do it.
Didn't you do like a freaking half marathon recently?
Yeah. Doesn't mean that I like it.
You just power through.
Kind of.
Oh, man. That's the discipline kicking in again.
Oh, yeah. Big times.
I'm just like, fuck it. I don't like it. I'm not doing it. Right. So... Pepsi or Coke, or neither, if you don't like either.
Neither, but then I would still say Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Because we never had Pepsi, maybe that's why.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, if you don't really drink it, maybe you don't know, but when you go to restaurants or whatever and you say, oh, can I have a Coke? And they say, we've got Pepsi, is that all right? You know, most people are just like, yeah, that's fine. The Carcass Light guy is the only person I've ever met who, when they say that, he just says, no, I will have nothing. He's like, I will have Coca-Cola or nothing.
I think the guitar player, the second guitar player of Exodus, he only drinks Coke. He never drinks water or anything. He just always drinks Coca-Cola.
What?
I think, I don't know if it's true, but he said it was like, once I drank water, I felt sick, so I will never drink it again.
Oh, God.
No, but if we talk about Coca-Cola flavored sodas crap, then I would prefer like some really tiny, strange, hipster Coca-Cola brands.
Yeah, fair enough.
I prefer
this. The artisan stuff.
Yeah, you pay like, what, 10 euro for this small shit.
For a tiny bottle. Yeah,
a tiny bottle, organic as fuck and whatnot, but yeah.
It's got ingredients from, you know, some kind of forest somewhere.
Correct.
Right, where do we go? Coke or Pepsi? And this is the last normal one. Apples or oranges? Would you rather have the citrus flavor or a nice crunchy apple?
Apple, big times.
Yeah, apple all the way. I hate the fucking peeling an orange. That pisses me off. It's too much mess.
Yeah, and also, no, I hate the white crap on it. You know, it's
oh,
like...
Oh, yeah. That's, yeah, exactly.
It doesn't give me satisfaction eating it.
A crunchy, fresh, juicy apple is the
oh,
shit.
Oh yeah, big
shit.
Times.
Yeah, always refreshing. Right, so now we're gonna do music related. There's a couple of drum things in there too. Okay, so studio or live?
Wow, it's difficult because both.
It's tough, isn't it? It's tough.
I don't know if you can put it together. But... Now, under these circumstances, I say live because I don't have it.
Yeah, I get that. Right in this moment, you say live. Yeah. Okay. I'm with you.
Like studio work. I do like it.
Yeah. It's a completely different discipline. There's so many different aspects of both that are so good, but they're both so different as well, aren't they? Like,
yeah. But there are some drummers that hate the studio and just live for playing live. You know, but for me, it's equally amazing and equally important.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's just completely different disciplines and you need to have both of them if you want to do it. If you want to do it on any level, then you need to be able to do both, which,
yes.
Again, I find the studio tough, but I still love it. Like, when it's done, I'm happy.
Of course,
but
when
going
it's done.
Into the studio, I'm just like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, the red button syndrome. Like, now let's play. I forgot everything. I cannot play. Yeah. Why I cannot play?
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Right, anyway, so... I think this one's pretty obvious for you, but double pedal or two kick drums?
Two fucking kick drums.
See, dude, and this is where I can respectfully... this is where we can respectfully disagree, because I've tried two kick drums so much, and it's not even the two kick drum thing. Like, I love the feel and the freedom that you get on the left, but it's the positioning of the kit. Like, I think I've just got so used to playing a double pedal that the feel of the rest of the kit with a double pedal just is so much more my comfort zone.
Okay.
But I guess, yeah, and you sometimes play with double pedal, right? Or is it just when you have to?
Just when I have to.
Okay, so two kicks all the way, 100%.
Yeah. Old school.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, it is old school. It is old school. But then there's the tuning thing, dude.
It's fucking horrible, but that's why life I play with triggers. Of course, I don't care, but at home I have two.
Yeah, you have the time. You have the time and you have the patience to tune both of them.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
I get it. And it looks fucking cool. So
I don't care about the look, but it's just like nicer to record. If you also record with a microphone, you can make the left kick a little bit louder. You can EQ it different. It's just... You need more space. You need another case. You need another drum head. You need a bigger car for the fucking fact that you have another kick drum.
It's exactly.
Actually, it makes no sense whatsoever.
But
it's fucking metal drumming, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the first album I ever recorded with two kick drums was the last Cox album, which hasn't been released yet. Obviously, I don't know when it's going to be released. We're still waiting on that. And again, that was at Fascination Street. And they tuned, I don't know if Jens does this too, but he tuned both kick drums differently. And I was like, huh?
No, he said, I didn't tune it on purpose. I tried to do it as close as possible, but still they sound always different.
They're naturally different. Yeah, exactly. But his whole thing was, when you have a double pedal anyway, you get a different tone and a different strike on the left beater, because it's a different part of the head. And it ended up like I would have never known that they were tuned differently. Like, when everything's going, I mean, they weren't tuned wildly differently, but it was like one was ever so slightly lower than the other one, and it was intentional as well. And I was like, fucking hell, I've never heard of that before. But apparently Dirk does it, you know, Dirk from Megadeth now, fucking Mr. Big Man. I love Dirk so much.
Of course. He's the man.
Such a legend. He is the man. But anyway, yeah, sorry, I'm getting distracted. So, two kicks.
Yes.
Triggers or mics?
I want mics all the way, as long as possible.
I totally agree with that. But
again, the live thing is another, how to say, it's a practical thing. And, you know, you just don't have time to tune two kick drums or whatever. Mm. And the trigger is just more comfortable and prepared.
Consistent.
Yes, consistent. Mm.
And I think there's also the type of music thing. You know, if you're playing super fast, crazy double kicks at like...
Yeah, of course.
250 or whatever. Oh. Microphones just... I mean, I'm not going to be doing that kind of stuff, but...
Me neither. No, we have other kids to let do them.
Yeah, we've got all the younger YouTube kids. But, yes. Yeah, I think you need the triggers at certain tempos and with certain styles of extreme drumming, I think. Right, anyway, so coated or clear?
Clear.
All the way?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah? No coated situation? There's no situation where you'd go for coated?
On the snare.
On the snare, yeah, obviously. Okay, cool. Blast or groove?
Groove.
Yeah, baby. I love that this is an Extreme Drummers podcast and we're saying microphones... and groove.
Hey, there are extreme drummers that use microphones and groove, you know?
That is true. Some of the best, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah?
Right, dude. Okay, this one could get you in some trouble.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't have to answer it. Slayer or Metallica?
I have to say Metallica because Slayer didn't listen to much, to be honest. So I say just Metallica.
See,
and you know what? I will also say one thing that will also offend everyone. I do like Sankt Anger.
Oh, interesting.
Suck my, you know what? No, I really like this album. I don't have a problem with that.
Wow. I'll be honest, I've never really listened to it, which is... I should probably at least give it a listen before I say it's shit, shouldn't I?
It's not shit, it's just something else, but I never understood this complete hatred against it. But so yeah, let's keep offending the people. I do like Sankt Dengar. And the Lars Ulrich ping snare, I don't give a shit. It just sounds a little bit different, but yeah, doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I offend people because I like the Load and Reload albums, and everyone's like,
I like them too.
Yeah, dude, they're great. Everyone's like, no, that's not Metallica. I'm like, well, it is Metallica, actually.
It is. And at this point, people stop the podcast and say, fuck off, man.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not listening to this shit anymore. I used to love these guys.
Yes. They lost all my respect.
Yeah, exactly.
Unfollow, unsubscribe now.
Yeah, so maybe I've just ruined your YouTube career. Sorry.
It's okay. I don't need these people.
He's joking. He loves you all.
I love you all. Please come back.
Right, so I think I know the answer to this one too. Wood or metal snare?
Metal.
Yeah, it's the only way. For the, our kind of music, it's the only way.
Yeah, you know, the rest of the kit is wood, so make something else.
Yeah, that's true.
Use something else.
That's true. Right, I know this one too. 5 A's or 2 B's? I know what you'd go for.
2 B's.
Yeah, baby.
Trees.
exactly, tree trunks. Again, this one you don't have to answer if you don't want to. European tour or US tour?
Fuck, European tour big time. Sorry, yeah. All the US people, but as much as I love playing in front of US crowd, but the touring situation is completely something else.
It's a whole different world.
It's a whole different world. For everyone that wants to know, it is literally a whole different world. And I just like my catering in Europe, and I like the fact that you get food and not a buyout, and you have to crawl in some dangerous area to get to some burger place. No, I'm not afraid to say that. So European tours is just more comfortable for artists.
And just to be clear for everybody, that this is no indication of the crowds. The crowds
no, never.
In America are just the crowds in America are some of the best in the world.
Exactly.
It's how you are treated as a performer in America is sometimes quite tricky.
It's just a different. It's just a different.
It's a different way of doing things.
Yes.
It?
Let's put it this
absolutely.
Way.
And to be fair, the UK is relatively similar to the US as well in a lot of ways when it comes to treating performers.
Yeah, there's always like a bunch of chips with like sour cream flavor in every pub you play.
Pringles.
No, Pringles is luxury. It's something else.
Oh, right. Okay, so last one. Festival or club?
Club, because festivals always sound cooler than they are, but this is always a pain in the ass. It's always stressful, no sound check, you know, lots of stress. You want to check out other bands, you have to do interviews at the same time. It's just as much as I do love to be on a festival, but it never really was like, fuck, it's the best thing in the world.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think some people who don't know what it's like at a festival, they don't realize that you never ever see the band at its best when you play a festival.
Never.
Because, never ever.
Because they usually play exactly at the same time as you are playing.
Yeah, exactly.
On the other side of the tent, and you're like, fuck.
Yeah, and I speaking of the social side of things, like, I find festivals hard because there's so much socializing that you need to go do stuff, and every 2 minutes you see someone, you're like, oh, hey, haven't seen you in 2 years. And then you talk for 15 minutes, and you're like, shit, I got to go. And then you walk another 2 minutes, then you see someone else you haven't seen in 2 years. You're like, oh, God, I got 5 minutes till stage time. Ah!
Yeah, and then you have to play, and you just, where's the toilet? And there's no fucking toilet. You just run down, and you just piss in a bottle, and like, fuck it, nobody saw it, and then run back up.
Oh, dude, and again, little shit for metal drummers, nerdy stuff for metal drummers. Is getting shit on your shoes, man. Like mud or dust or
horrible.
Fucking... Or if it's raining. Oh my God, man.
That's why I changed my drumming shoes on the drum riser.
Yeah.
During the intro.
That's a big... Dude, secrets. These are the industry secrets.
Yes.
Again, these are the things you learn, aren't they, with experience.
You get
up there and you're sliding all over your pedals because they're muddy and wet. You're like, what is this?
That's the fucking inside of a toilet from a festival, which is on my pedals right now.
I'm never touching my pedals again.
Yeah. 5 minutes later, you have to get it off the riser now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No towels anywhere.
No, just go for it.
Covered in piss. Anyway, right, so my last thing, this is a top three thing. And the standard is like, you know, top three drummers or top three Metallica songs. But I'm going to do top three countries to play in.
Boy, it's very difficult.
I was going to say. But you don't have to give me a definite answer.
I don't have 1, 2, 3 like in like this is the first place. But I always enjoy playing in Russia. It has always been amazing to play there. It's really difficult. South America was some crazy shows.
We played
like in Chile or in Costa Rica. People were mental, you know.
Yeah. The hunger. I think it's similar in Russia. There's a kind of hunger that's like kind of in our lovely spoilt European.
Correct.
maybe there's not quite the same hunger. I don't know.
Yeah, and the third one is just really tricky. You know, I had amazing shows in even countries where we would say we are spoiled. You know.
Mm. Oh, of course. Yeah. Sometimes they're some of the best as well, but for. Different reasons.
Yeah, it's tricky. What else? France. I would say France.
France loves metal. I've never been in a band where there's been a bad reaction in France.
Exactly. So please don't be offended if your country wasn't there. It's just, actually, I shouldn't give any answer, but these are countries that just came up on my mind.
Well, maybe if you feel you want me to edit it out, just give me a text.
Yeah, if the hate messages, you can take it down after it's being released and then re-release it.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that possible?
Yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, exactly. I won't promote it. I'll release it and do it like a test group.
Yes, and then if there's a shitstorm, we just take it off cut it out.
So we've offended the Metallica fans and we've offended...
and the Slayer fans.
Oh, and the Slayer. I mean, although, yeah, I'd choose Slayer or Metallica. So again, that's where the respectfully disagree thing. So, so we've got both sides of the coin there. We've got one Slayer, one Metallica.
And it's fair.
Yeah, exactly. See, 50-50. And double pedal, two kicks. So, you know.
Yin yang, bitch, it goes.
It's an open-minded podcast, this is.
Oh, yes, it is.
But yeah, so that's everything I got, dude. And I've realized we've been talking for like an hour and 50 minutes or something, almost an hour and 45 minutes.
So what?
Crazy. Exactly.
For all these people that are still listening, you made it. Congratulations.
You made it. Thank you. And I'm sorry for making you sit through all of this. But yeah, thank you, man. This has been great.
Definitely.
I had loads more stuff to ask, but then you'd never get any sleep.
It's okay, come on. But we could, let's see, you know, if we want, we can do in the future part two.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I got a few of these lined up still.
That's perfect. Because
inevitably I'm going to run out. So, you know, I need to get you back.
Yeah, I wish you all the success with the podcast.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you very much.
We want to get all the good drummers out there. So make sure that's happening.
I'm trying my best. I'm using my best, my nice voice to ask people, please.
Yes. No, but I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much. I hope the listeners that are listening, you enjoyed it as much as we did, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That was great fun. And yes, thank you very much. I'll keep in touch with when it's all coming out and all that kind of stuff. And we'll speak soon.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you very much, dude. Thank you so much. Legend. The man, the myth, the legend.
And Come on.
Yeah, rad. Thank you, dude. We'll speak again soon.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.